Okay, speaking of the studio, there was a funky smell in here yesterday, right?
Ooh, man, it smelled like old cheese.
Was it the carrots?
No, it was not the carrots. So I made paper mache paste for my kiddos, and it had like fermented.
Okay, so. Well, I thought it was my armpit because my surgery armpit has like, it's healing, right? So it does have like a smell.
Sure. I have not smelled you, for the record.
No, normally I, like, if I'm just sitting there, I can't smell it. I just smell it like, well, I mean, I'm always checking it out, you know?
Yeah. Well, you were up here at the front, and I was like, how can she not smell this? It was so bad in the back.
Okay, well, I heard you and Nancy kind of mention something, but then I thought it was the carrots, which would have been my fault.
No, they were fine. I mean, it's a gross container, but they did not smell that bad.
And so, but then I also thought it was my armpit until I heard y'all say something. And then I was like, okay, it's not my armpit.
Man, trying to figure out what to do with that paste was...
What did you do with it?
So I was started to like, because the top, it had settled, so it had liquid up top. So I got rid of that. And then I was like, what, am I supposed to put this in the trash? And I thought, no, I'm going to like put it in the toilet, flush it. But it, anyways, it turned out to be a whole big mess. And it kind of stank for a while, but I think it's slowly dissipating now.
I could smell it when I came in today.
I mean, there's a little bit of it left, but let me tell you, it's nowhere near when I first cracked open that seal.
I'm impressed you didn't just throw it away. That's what I would have done. I would have been like...
No, those are useful containers. Like, I'm not going to put food in there, but...
Right, but those containers are what, like $2?
Well, like $3.
Yeah. I don't do gross smells.
I guess I have a higher pain tolerance there. Or a smell tolerance.
Yeah. Okay, well, paper mache will stink, so deal with it.
Yes. Quickly.
Quickly, yeah. This is Be Createful, a podcast about finding fullness through creativity. I'm Joe.
And I'm Madison. And today on episode 83, we are talking about... not selling yourself short. And Joe, I have a real issue with this. Well, I mean, I feel like I say that every time now, but
you have an issue with other people doing it, or you have a problem doing it yourself?
I do it myself. Okay. I've got a little story. When I was in sixth grade, we would get those little tickets, you know, when you would do good things, and we called it Cub Cash. And at the end of the year, we would have like a marketplace. Well, at the time, I was making these little miniature fairies, and I may have told this on the podcast before, so I'll keep it real short. And anyways, I did not price them appropriately and made very little. And then when I had someone watch my shop for me, they took half of my Cub Cash. Half! For like watching it for like 5 minutes while I shopped. And I should have been more clear and communicated and... Whew.
I think that this is... Well, I want to outline, I don't want to spoil anything we're going to talk about, but just for people who are listening, because I think some parts will connect to different people. One, this is the number one thing that I see, question I see in anyone who's an entrepreneur, like not just even a creative entrepreneur, but someone who has their own business, even at Make Do, deciding how much our classes are going to be.
Yep.
If you're a graphic designer, if you are a... insert, like, I have people trimming my trees right now. Like, how much do they charge? Whether you are selling your wares or your services, I think that pricing yourself is one of the hardest things. And it will make or break your business, obviously.
Yes.
So that is kind of the obvious way that we'll talk about selling yourself short. But then we also recognize that not everyone is in that entrepreneur situation. And there are ways that we metaphorically sell ourselves short that have nothing to do with money. So we will get into a discussion about that too.
I could totally use this conversation because I have issues with both. So hopefully I'll learn something today.
Okay. So, but this got brought up by a very real experience you're going through right now.
Yes.
Explain.
So I was commissioned to make 10 costumes for our local university, and they asked me, you know, we need an invoice. And I thought, I've never made an invoice before. How do I do this? As in the process of doing that, I had to figure out not only like what the supplies would cost, but what my time was worth. And I discussed this with the person. I said, you know, I'm new to this. This is what I normally charge for like my alterations per hour, you know, and kind of talked about what my pricing might be. And it was so hard to do. It was whenever you're interacting with money, it gets real emotional real quick. Mm-hmm. And so putting the value of my time is worth this much, just it caused like a whole fissure within me of I want to value the expertise that I have that I'm going to put into this and the work, but also it's fun for me and I also
right.
enjoy it. And I'm not, this is like my side job. I'm not going to not eat if I undercharge myself.
Right.
Which adds a whole nother thing. Yeah. And I want to do this. So like if I'm too expensive, all that.
Yeah. You know, I felt all of those same things when I was doing the mural.
Girl, I felt recently. Like I was channeling you mm-hmm. when I was making this invoice. I was like, oh, Joe was doing the same thing, sitting on the couch, figuring out like supplies, how much it would cost, what you would do per hour,
yeah.
asking people about
it. No, okay. So speaking of, here's one thing per hour. Mm-hmm. I didn't charge per hour. I charged for the project.
Yes. You charge per, what was it? Per
square foot.
Because that's how muralists typically
But still,
charge.
Whenever I totaled up the square foot, the number was so astronomical to me mm-hmm. that I thought, oh, I can't do this. So I like reduced it even still.
Yeah.
With the project being over,
mm-hmm.
I should have charged more.
Yeah.
Now, I got value that wasn't monetary, right?
Yes.
Because I wanted to do it. I got the experience of doing it. But then I also had to have a shoulder surgery after. So
that's true.
It wasn't because of the mural, but that mm-mm. was just like the last straw.
Straw that broke the camel's shoulder.
Yes. So there is like a learning curve at the beginning. Your clients are helping you learn the process mm-hmm. and that adds value too.
Oh, absolutely. I was lucky enough in the beginning of my alteration business to have clients who did catering or other servicey business. And so when I would say, all right, here's my price, they would look at me and go, really? And I thought, oh, shit. They're like, yeah, you need to be charging a little bit
yes.
more. So they were kind enough
yeah.
to tell
Here's
me that.
Here's another thing. And you can decide if you want to share numbers or not. That's yeah. up to you. You'll have to pay taxes on this money.
Yes, 100%. Like,
well, not 100%
okay,
taxes.
No. I am way over the limit for like
so
not
paying
taxes.
So if you're listening to this and you don't know, if you have a side hustle, the limit is $600. If you make more than $600 doing your side hustle, you have to pay taxes. I don't know.
And is it something like 50%?
No. And once you're doing that, everything is a write-off. Mm. So, you know, if you drive to go get fabric for this project, mm. that mileage, that gas is a write-off. So that reduces the amount that you're spending. You can write off wear and tear on your sewing machine. Like there's all kinds of things that you can do. We are not accountants.
No, go talk to someone who actually knows this, but know that this is...
But for example, the mural that I painted, mm-hmm. all of the supplies that I bought reduced the amount of money that I made. So like... You're paying taxes on your profit, mm-hmm. not on the total.
Well, I'm curious
but
about.
But you're also going to get a 1099 from them,
yeah.
which means you will have to pay not just income tax, you'll have to pay the Social Security and Medicare tax.
Yes.
So that will be 15% that you have to pay.
There you go. So I'm curious, didn't you charge them for supplies that you like, that was part of your price of doing the project?
No.
Okay.
It's included in the price of the square footage. Like
oh,
the square
okay.
footage price includes all of the supplies. It included my design time and it included the painting time.
See, I divided up my invoice by like, here's a general, like, here's how much supplies cost and here's how much my time is. And here is like the total for all of it. And I did that because most people don't understand how expensive fabric is.
I think it's fine to have an itemized, especially, okay, like something like what you're doing, fabric prices are going to vary greatly.
Yes.
Painting prices don't.
Okay.
And if I can get like a deal on paint or use paint from a previous project, see, that's where the supplies don't belong to them. They mm-hmm. belong to me. So like, let's say I did another mural and I used paint from this project. Mm-hmm. Well, does that mean I charge the other people less because I'm using paint I've already bought? No.
Yeah.
So I would always recommend, though, pricing by project, not by time, as much as you can. Because what it does is if you are good at your job and you're fast and it takes you less hours, mm-hmm. then if you're charging by the hour, you are actually selling yourself short by being efficient at your work.
Well, and I say by hour. I estimated about how much time it's going to take me, mm-hmm. and that's just going to be what they pay me. If I happen to get it done faster, that's good for me.
And if you get it done slower, are you going to charge them more?
I don't know. I haven't considered that just yet.
Well, you need to, and you need to have a contract with them.
Okay.
Because I am of the mind that charging by the project protects you as the creator, and it protects your client. Mm-hmm. Because let's say that you've told them it's going to take 50 hours, mm-hmm. and you've quoted them for that amount, and then it takes you 100. Mm. Well, what are... You're really leaving them in a bind then to say, oh, never mind. It was twice what I thought that it was going to be. Mm-hmm. So I think you can almost charge a little more by saying this is the most that it will be. Mm-hmm. It just protects you both.
That'll be good because what I've really enjoyed about working with local people is that most people know that I'm new to this. And so they're willing to have a conversation with mm-hmm. me and work some of these things out. But some people may not have that luxury when they're trying to price what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So in that case, I think you'd have to go and talk to people on the opposite side of it, people who are already doing like commission work, you know, whatever you're wanting to do, and figure out how they price things.
Oh, absolutely. I think research is the first thing that you need to be doing. And like there's some... there are some mural artists that I follow that are very open about what they charge. And that's who I got like the square footage from. They had a template for a contract that was like $50. Okay. Mm-hmm. So obviously I did that because I didn't want to have to come up with a contract.
Yeah.
And they talk all the time about how when people hold their prices close to their vest, it actually hurts the entire industry mm-hmm. because underselling your craft, like yourself, makes people devalue what you're doing. And so then
they'll go to the next person, or they may, you know, encounter
then people
others
who are charging what they should be. Mm-hmm. People are gonna be like, that's too expensive, when it's not.
Yeah. When it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's important not just for yourself, but for the entire, whatever industry you're in, that you are charging appropriately.
Yeah. So, well, there you go. See, I'm already learning things in this conversation.
So you've sent them the invoice?
I've sent them the invoice.
Did they balk at it?
I haven't heard anything back yet. We'll see. And I overestimated in the amount of time that I might need. But I think what I'm going to do in light of this conversation is go back and say, hey, you know, maybe we need to have a little bit more of a conversation where I say, like, this is where it's going to, like, cap out. That way I'm not charging you by the hour. More like by each piece.
So you're making some costumes. How many are you making?
I'm making 10.
Okay. So I would, your time aside, mm-hmm. I would say, what is a reasonable price to pay for each costume?
Yeah. And some are more elaborate than others, and some are quite simple. So I can vary it in that way, but you also have to be careful when you're considering like, oh, it's more simple, so it's going to cost a lot less. You have to consider like the work that goes in. Like just the other day, we were talking about a new project that we might be that we're going to have at Make Do, and we talked about a smaller version versus a larger version. Uh-huh. But what people don't often understand is that even though it may take less material, it oftentimes takes the same amount of time.
Also, it may not take less material. There might just be less waste.
Or there might be more waste.
Yeah,
so it takes the same amount of materials. And so that's something else to look out mm-hmm. for. Like, oh, if I just do a mini version, it'll be cheaper. Mm-mm. No, not necessarily. Mm-mm. So that's something that I'm also going to keep in mind as I discuss more with this university.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Because I think that price per costume could help them to see, like, what are your headphones making funny sound?
What do you hear? What kind
just
of sound?
Just like a crackle. In and out. It's not doing it now. Will you just push my, make sure that they're plugged in really well? Okay. It's just like static. But it's not constant. It's just like cutting in and out.
Just occasionally?
Yeah.
Okay. So having a price per costume would help them see like, oh, this is the value of the whole, like each individual item.
Maybe. Like, and honestly, you may be surprised that they don't say anything. Yeah. Also, this is university. They got some money.
Yes, they do. So, but I'm not here to be greedy.
No, but you are selling your free time.
Which is something else that I wanted to talk about because this is my side hustle. It's not my main job.
And a lot of times I think that we think, oh, well, our side hustle, we should charge less because it's just a side hustle.
But no, I am currently going to charge them more per hour for my free time than I would working here at Make Do.
Yes. It's just like how a contractor gets paid more than someone who is like salaried that mm-hmm. actually works for a company. Like it being your side hustle means you are giving up your free time.
Yeah. It's not just like I had these hours lying around and I was like, ooh, I can just make some money by mm-hmm. like doing something like during this time. That's time that I use to make my own wardrobe, discover new recipes that rest. I want to cook, rest,
read,
hang out with friends,
be lazy, whatever you want to do. Like when I was thinking about, okay, you're selling your free time. And then I was like, maybe we should talk about not now necessarily, mm-hmm. but how do we spend our time and do we value it like we should, because it's a non-renewable resource and all that. And then I was like, man, I sure have been spending a lot of time just reading and watching TV. That's a lot of wasted time. Mm-hmm. So even that idea of like wasted time,
like, oh, I was just watching some TV show.
Right. Like, but it's still my choice what I'm doing with that time.
Yeah. It's yours to do it. Mm-hmm.
And there's like freedom.
There's very few things in this world that you have control over. You know, you've got your job that you got to go to. You have responsibilities to your family. Your free time, however short it may be, is quite valuable. Mm-hmm. And what you choose to do with it says a lot about your person. As a little side note, when I first meet people, I don't ask them what they do. I ask them, what do you do in your free time if you have any? Mm-hmm. Because that gives me more of an insight into the kind of person they are versus what their job is. Mm-hmm. It just shows you where their heart is at.
Well, and even that is going to fluctuate, like, depending on your mental health, mm-hmm. depending on your physical health.
Yes.
I mean, like, right now, I'm spending a lot of time. I'm not going to say doing nothing because I'm like,
you've been reading quite a bit. Yeah.
And I am watching a lot of TV, but I'm also reading a lot. I don't know.
And you're also letting your body heal.
Yeah.
So like there's that too.
Yeah.
So valuing your free time is so incredibly important. It's not just like, oh, it's free time. So it's free.
Free.
So I can,
uh-huh.
Friends. No, it is not free.
Do you think that, okay, I'm just thinking about when I've had friends who have asked me to make a quilt for them mm-hmm. or something. Those are the times I undersell.
Yeah.
Oh, when it's sell myself short.
When it's a friend?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I remember in college, I had a roommate who said, I was looking at this beautiful watercolor picture she did, and I was like, oh, that's so beautiful. She goes, oh, I would love to make you one. We could do a trade. I was like, sure. She's like, you can make me a dress. And I said, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Because I know that there is a distinct difference between me making her a dress and the value of that watercolor painting.
Also, just materials alone.
Yeah, this is the one thing. I know this is real specific to me, but fabric is incredibly expensive, and our fast fashion industry has conditioned us to think that a t-shirt should cost $2, and my friends, it simply does not.
Yeah, like I have told people before, if you buy the fabric, I'll do, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I lost my train of thought.
It's just, so that painting, it could have cost $100. If I made her a dress, it would have been way more than that.
Yeah. Well, and a watercolor painting that cost $100 is like $5 of supplies.
Yes.
Like being generous.
Yeah.
If you're buying like...
Yeah. And if she
spent... If you have a lot of watercolor supplies.
Yeah. Like, and how long do you spend on a watercolor paint? Like, this was... It was a beautiful painting, but based on what I know now, I'm like, It probably took you a couple hours to do that.
But this is where you're not paying for time. This is where I think we have to divorce the value mm-hmm. of something from the time it took. You know the story about Picasso?
Which one?
Okay. So a woman like walks up to him in a cafe or something and says, oh, will you draw my portrait? And so he takes 5 minutes or something and draws her on a napkin and hands it to her and says, that'll be $400 or something. Mm-hmm. And she says, what? You just did that in a minute.
Yeah.
And he said, I've been doing this for years.
Yes.
Like, you're not paying expertise for this. Right. And so with with watercolor, I think with art, it is even more apparent that that's what you're paying for. Like anytime you see an abstract painting and somebody goes, I could do that. Could you?
Yeah. Could you actually?
Right.
Do you know what goes into this and how to manipulate?
Yeah.
But I think it's hard for, I think even for me, because I do get paid by the hour. Mm-hmm. And so that is how I think about my time,
mm-hmm.
even at home where I'm like, if I was working at Make Do, like how do I do all that?
But even like paying you by the hour even is a metric that helps us price things here.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I think, well, if Madison is teaching this class and I'm paying her X amount, then
how many people would it take to make it worth the time mm-hmm. to be able to have
yeah,
that class?
And that's what is different about you paying you by the hour versus me being salaried. Because I've said before,
my time is free.
My time to Make Do is free. What I mean is, it is already paid for.
Yes.
And it doesn't increase. So like,
it doesn't vary.
I'm making up for it this month.
Taking that good rest,
yeah.
which you need.
Yeah.
You need that rest so you can heal.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, again, you can just hear that how hard it is to get out of that mindset of, well, I need to price myself by the hour. But even though I do price myself by the hour currently, I price myself in accordance with my experience. Like, you're paying for an experienced hand, so that's why it costs so much per hour. Because
right.
it might take me less time to make this, whatever the thing is, but I can do that because I'm so experienced.
Right. But that's where I think, even in what you do, pricing by the project still makes more sense
yeah.
to me. And with as your expertise increases, so does your pricing.
Yes.
So just like with my mural, I undercharged. It was my first one.
Mm-hmm.
But as I did, I'm not going to paint again for a year, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But the more I would do, the more I would like increase my range
mm-hmm.
of what it would cost per square foot.
Yes.
Okay. Have we started talking about tips for pricing? I think just do your research. I did, like, we did
yes.
talk about that. We talked about how underpricing devalues everyone in the industry. We talked about keeping in mind that you're selling your free time.
Mm-hmm.
Another just practical tip I would have is to have a minimum.
Oh, yes. So we do this with our birthday parties.
Mm-hmm.
That no matter how many people you invite, it at least is going to cost this amount.
Yes, because Madison is going to be here for 2 hours. We're going to be using
supplies.
Our space and our supplies. And so it's not worth it if we only make $100.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, so like with me painting murals and that taking up my free time and it takes up a lot of my free time because I am slow because I don't do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I've already decided my minimum for that will be $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then that lets someone who's like, hey, I saw that mural that you did. I love it. I want, like, would you do one for me?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, my minimum is $1,000. And then that lets them know from the beginning, oh, okay, that's out of my price range.
Yeah.
So then I'm not the person for you.
Yeah. Either you learn how to do it on your own or you find
yeah.
someone.
Right. I think that I've seen this idea going around social media a little bit, like letting other people dictate. A lot of times I think I wouldn't pay that much for that.
Mm-hmm.
So how can I charge that much for that? Well, I wouldn't pay that much for it. Why? One, because I'm cheap. Like, I mean, on some things.
Yeah.
or it's out of my budget. So like I've heard people saying how instead of having a mindset that something is too expensive, like someone is charging too much, reframing that to say that's outside of my budget.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that that person isn't worth that much.
Mm-hmm.
It just means I am not the one to engage with their product mm-hmm. or their service.
Sometimes I think about, I reframe it in a mindset of, is it important enough to someone to spend the money on that? Like, I think about some things that are sold on Etsy, like these handcrafted items. For some people, they will spend and they'll save and then spend a good amount of money on a handcrafted item because that's what they want to spend their money on, mm-hmm. where they might be cheap in other places.
Right. Right.
They have they put a higher value on right. that. So maybe you just haven't found the person who wants to put the effort or
I want to spend the money on.
Yes.
Yeah. What was I going to say? One thing where I think that people for sure undervalue stuff is t-shirt quilts.
Oh, the amount of times that I've had to explain to someone on the phone, like what it takes to make a t-shirt quilt. Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Because they think I'm supplying all the t-shirts.
Like you're that's not all even the having fabric, to buy right? material. Well, let me tell you, friends, it's the fact that you have to stabilize every single one of those t-shirts.
Well, and not to get into the weeds of what it takes to make a t-shirt quilt, but to use that as, we have an episode, you maybe wrote it down because I know you went back, about doing business with creatives.
Mm, yes.
I don't remember what episode
I don't
number
have it,
is.
It right now.
It's a ways back. Anyway, if you are on that end, if you are the person who is talking to a creative and negotiating a price. I know that's not what we're talking about right now, but I think that it helps people not to sell themselves short. If you can trust that the person you're talking to also values your expertise and isn't just trying to like get a good deal from you. Like people aren't commodities. Like we aren't a thing to try to get a good deal.
Okay. Oftentimes when people go to someone to have something, okay, I shouldn't say oftentimes, there are certain situations, people will come to you thinking that having you do it is going to be cheaper than buying it from like a mass produced yeah. whatever. And that's just not true.
No.
Categorically not
no,
true.
Never. It would never be true.
No. So if you are one of those people, I just want to let you know now, it's always going to be more expensive to have a person customize, hand make an item,
mm-hmm.
period.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Realize that now.
Mm-hmm. And so here's an example. One of our itty bitty parents has a cleaning business. And so I asked them what their rates were because like, you know, at my house.
Well, we already... Yeah, clean. We already talked about how we struggle to keep things clean here at Make Do.
Yeah, and so I just thought, I've always thought having someone clean my house would be out of my budget, but I don't know. So I asked her what her rates were, and yes, it is indeed out of my budget. But I'm not going to say, oh, that's too expensive. It's not. Like,
it just happens to be out of your budget.
It's just out of my budget. So I forgot why I brought that up again, but I guess just me as the person asking someone else what their rates were, I'm giving them the respect
mm-hmm.
that they deserve as like a professional in their industry. And I'm not trying to undervalue them when it's already hard for them not to sell themselves short to begin with.
Exactly.
Okay. Do you have any more thoughts on
how we sell ourselves short? Mm. I think we've talked a lot about a lot that has to do with like money
mm-hmm.
and commerce.
Oh yeah. That's what I meant.
Okay.
With the money part.
With
what the current conversation.
No, I just want, well, I say no. I do just want to reiterate that while I was going through this process of pricing myself, I had to ask myself questions like, how do I value my time and my expertise? But something that also crept into my mind was how do others value my work? And I really had to shut that out, which is kind of what you just talked about.
Yes.
It's like, you cannot take it from the perspective of like, oh, well, would I pay for this? Or like, how will Mm-mm. other people know?
Mm-mm. Because everyone's going to value different things.
Exactly. So if you are in the process of trying to price yourself, take that question out of your mind. You don't think about how others will value your work.
Yeah. Okay. So then there is another layer to this conversation.
Ooh.
About selling ourselves short.
Yes.
Not to do with like what we're paid at all,
mm-hmm.
but just our personal value. Now I will say in our capitalist society, I think the commerce side, the fiscal part of our value and our like inherent value in worth are synonymous.
Which is why, like when I talked about earlier, when I ask people, I don't ask them what they do, because oftentimes in order in an effort to get to know someone, we ask that first
mm-hmm.
and try to put that label on them mm-hmm. first.
And what we do and who we are is not the same thing.
Exactly. Finding out what someone does or wants to do in their free time tells me a lot more about who they are.
Yeah. It's the same as asking kids like what they want to be when they grow up.
Oh, I don't do that anymore.
No.
I ask them about what they enjoy now.
Yeah.
Because that tells me way more about the person. But you're right. What we do and who we are just seems to be so wrapped up in our, as a society.
Yeah. And even, you know, thinking, I hadn't thought about it this way, but even that question, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Mm-hmm.
Like kind, a human?
Yeah.
You know, that's a different way of even saying it than what do you want to do when you grow up?
Yeah. What job do you want to have when you're older?
Yeah.
What are you? Yeah. Even that, I ask them, what are you interested in? When you get older, what would you like to be doing?
Yeah. That's different than like, what do you want to be?
Yes.
So there are other ways that we sell ourselves short every day that have nothing to do with how much we are getting paid.
Yes.
I can say number one for me right now, and I talked about this a little bit at the end of the episode last week, is connecting my personal value to my productivity.
Mm.
And again, that goes to what I was saying about our society being so entrenched in capitalism and that everything is connected to like a monetary value. And that, I don't know, like that gets all into minimum wage. Like if you increase minimum wage, are you devaluing the expertise of other workers, but then you want people to have money to live? Like mm-hmm. it's so complicated when we are wrapping up our personal value with productivity.
Oh, that's tough. Like I just,
especially with productivity, we only look at productivity in one way, right? Like it's easy right now because I have a sling on and my recovery is very obvious to be like, oh no, take this time and rest. But what is it going to be like in 2 months when the sling is gone, but I still have a long road of recovery ahead. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And that is what a lot of people are dealing with. Like their struggles are on the inside of them.
Yeah. Maybe they've got mental health or like mm-hmm. things that are going on in their life mm-hmm. that is taking so much more of their energy.
And that affects their productivity.
Yes. So just
so then does it also affect their value?
No. Selves in relationships, like just with people in general. Mm-hmm. And one thing I thought of is we undervalue ourselves in an effort to be humble in order to be in relationships with people. Now, not everyone struggles with this.
We
undervalue ourselves in an effort to be humble.
Oh, because we're trying to be humble. I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. You know, no one really likes a braggart, right?
Right.
So we will often say, oh, you know, it was nothing. Like, you know, you try to talk yourself down, but some people will take those talking points and start to internalize them and really truly believe that what they're doing is not much.
Also, and I want to interrupt you to interject. I think systemically and generally speaking, stereotypically speaking, this happens more with women than men.
Yes. I totally agree.
Because women's work has not been valued the way that men's work has been valued.
I mean, you just have to look at the statistics to see that, like, even monetarily, mm-hmm. it has not been valued.
Right. The fact that women make, what, 67 cents to the dollar that men make?
I think for white women, it's up to 82%, 82 okay. cents for every dollar. Uh-huh. But yeah, still not dollar for dollar.
No, and we can't talk about white women. Like, it almost doesn't matter what white women are making per dollar to the men, because women of color are
That's why I made that distinction, yeah. was because that's a totally different rate.
Right.
So there you go. Like, not everyone's work is valued at the same. But yeah. anyways.
Sorry, humility.
Yeah. So in an effort to be liked by people and for people to want to be around us, we devalue what we do. Oftentimes, when I experience this when I am talking about the clothes that I make, I'm like, oh, you know, it's just like a side out, like it's a mm-hmm. thing. Like, I just try not to, mm-hmm. instead of being proud and saying, thank you, yes, I did work really hard on this, and owning that full compliment that someone is giving me.
I had a similar thought, but I'm actually going to rephrase it now that you said that. Originally, I had thought it's because we doubt our expertise. And I think that that can be true. Mm-hmm. But in light of what you've just said, I think what is more true is that we belittle our expertise.
Yes. Now, I would say towards the beginning, you know, when we were starting this podcast, I really truly believe that I was not as good of a seamstress as I look. Like, older Madison looking back is like, nah, you were good.
Right.
You knew what you were doing. And so now when I would say things like that, I would say I'm belittling myself. So I think you can kind of grow or change in between those two.
Yes. And we talked about that probably at length in our Becoming Intermediate episode. Mm-hmm. About, you know, when are you no longer a beginner and when can you trust your expertise? You know, it doesn't mean you're an expert just because the word is expertise.
Yeah.
It's a ladder. I mean, it's an ongoing journey, right?
This kind of leads me into another point is that we often sell ourselves short while we're comparing ourselves to other people.
Oh, absolutely.
So like I'm comparing myself like in my sewing to some like haute couture, you know, seamstress who's making these things on the runway and has all of this like tailoring expertise, when I'm definitely like a like intermediate to high intermediate sewer.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was comparing myself to a pro, I was like, I'm just not really that good. Like, I'm not the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore I thought it wasn't really worth talking mm-hmm. about. But obviously I have enough talent that people know about it, and I have people coming to me saying, I need you to make this for me.
Right.
So like, oh, trying to deal with that cognitive dissonance there is
yes.
kind of weird.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And you are seeing other people's, the outcome of their work, not the process.
Mm-hmm.
So they could be spending five times as long to do something that looks the same as what you do. Okay, so who has better expertise there.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they could be having all the same doubts you do.
It's very true.
Okay. I think that we sell ourselves short by putting limits on what we see as valuable.
Okay.
So here's what
Elaborate.
I mean.
Elaborate.
Currency has an agreed upon value.
A dollar's a dollar, baby.
Right. Now, I know, blah, 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 global market, inflation, currencies rise and fall, but we still have a number that we can attach to it.
Sure.
And if you say a loaf of bread is $3 and then someone is selling a loaf of bread for $10, you can be like, that loaf of bread too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So there are currency gives us metrics that we can use to determine the value of something.
Yeah.
But if you take currency out of it, I think that it's too easy to limit the other things that we see as valuable. So let me see if I can think of an example. Okay, like a lot of times I wish I was more of a people person. Like, or I wish I felt more comfortable around people and then I didn't always feel so like awkward or think, oh, I don't know what to say to this person. Like, you are really good at small talk and you are good at asking people questions and having conversation with strangers, and I am not. I'd rather have another shoulder surgery. But people enjoy being around me. So obviously I bring something to the table when it comes value, to being around other people. But if I'm only valuing being able to have small talk with strangers and I'm not recognizing that maybe I think I can have a really steadfast presence. Mm-hmm. That adds value, but it has nothing to do with like what the value you add mm-hmm. in a social setting. So that's what I mean by that we're putting limitations on what we see as valuable.
So to me, it seems like, well, hearing that, you're using someone else's metrics to measure yourself.
Or metrics that are like socially in demand.
Sure.
So
that person's really funny. I wish I was that funny.
Yes.
But at the same time, you happen to be a person who's really good at listening.
Right.
Or you have a lot of wisdom to share.
Right. I mean, it's the same as like beauty. There, you know, we have beauty standards and we know that those are always changing, but there are still physical qualities that we see as more desirable than other physical qualities. Mm-hmm. And all of that is specific to our culture, right? And our, this time and place that we're in now, because we know that those standards change. Mm-hmm. And so I think it can be the same with character traits or whatever. And yeah. So some of them are valued more than others.
Oh, okay. See, I was just thinking that like in that instance, people just need to find what is value, like what is about them that is valuable, and just, you know, define yourself by that.
Yeah. But I think that that's the answer to it. Like that's how you combat it. It's like, let's to go back to beauty. Like we say, everyone is beautiful. Well, that's really easy to say when you are beautiful, mm-hmm. but how do you expect the ugly duckling to look in the mirror and be like, I'm beautiful, when there's nothing around that person that's telling them that they are. And then we're like, find your inner beauty. Like there, this is why it's so easy to sell ourselves short, because a society,
society values a certain thing, right, and you may not have that
right.
certain
so
thing.
We're, as a society, we limit the things that we see as valuable.
I gotcha. I think I'm tracking with you now.
And so as individuals, that makes it a lot harder to know our worth. Like that can be such a ridiculous cliche to tell someone when, of course, everyone has worth. But sometimes someone may have to help you see that in yourself.
It's true. That's why you should fill up your Instagram feed or whatever with positive people instead of people that really make you feel like you are less than.
Right.
Yeah.
And not to bring it up all the time, but this is why I hate fake it till you make it. Yeah. I think it plays into all of this too. It's like telling me, okay, well, I don't feel valuable, but I think these things are valuable, but I don't feel like I have a connection to them, but I'm going to pretend like I do so that I have some semblance of value.
Yeah, that's tough. Mm. All right. Another way that we sell ourselves short is in an effort to meet someone at their level so that, and I put in parentheses, so that we don't cast a shadow on someone. I suppose that this can kind of tie into being humble, but this is when, like, you are afraid to shine when you should be. Like,
when you should be shining.
Yeah. Like, you are afraid to take up space because someone else, you might be encroaching on someone else's space. Now, this particular issue is also something that I specifically deal with. I don't think everyone deals with this, but again, it's in an effort to remain in connection with someone. Mm-hmm. So you're like, well, okay, I'm actually not that great because it means more to me to be in connection with you than it does for people to see my value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is not something that this is not part of my personality.
Yeah. It's when you make yourself small so mm-hmm. that you can be in relationship with someone else. Mm-hmm. I often see this with teenagers when they're getting into friendships or even romantic relationships mm-hmm. with each other, where they're afraid to talk about the things or enjoy the things that they really like so that they can have community with someone.
Now, I would say I can see this in like a romantic relationship, because I remember coming home in sixth grade and telling my dad that I beat all of the boys in arm wrestling, and him telling me that one day I would learn to, like, that maybe I win by letting them win.
Yeah.
And at the time I thought, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But now I know what he meant. Mm-hmm. Now, do I agree with it? No. Like, my strength shouldn't make someone else feel weak.
I had something similar. I love to debate and I love to talk with people. Mm-hmm. And so I'd get very animated and, like, I was ruthless. And I can't remember who said it, but, like, one of my parents was like, you know, maybe you should tone it down a little bit. You know, those guys mm-hmm. get really intimidated by you. And I was like, what? What do you mean intimidated? Like, they were in there arguing with me. Like, why right. is that a problem?
Right.
But it's that thing of, like, oh, well, you have to, like, humble yourself.
You have to lower your bar.
Yeah.
So that people feel like they measure up instead of.
Or that you've become more approachable.
Yeah.
You know, when people think that you are less, oh, well, then you're easier to approach. That's not how you get people to approach you. It's authenticity.
Yeah.
That's the true, like, avenue for vulnerability. Like, this is who I am. Yes, I am an intense, like, I love intense conversations and debating with people. But at the same time, if I hold that with vulnerability and authenticity, then, yeah, I will still be able to have connection with people. It just requires a balance of both, which as a teenager, I can definitely tell you I did not have that balance.
No. Well, and because we still value the connection, right? So a lot of times we will sell ourselves short for the connection, mm-hmm. which I think is what you're saying.
Yes.
But then that connection is faulty to begin with.
Because it's not through true authenticity.
Right.
When you finally get to a point where you're comfortable and you're like, all right, I can, like, start being back to the me that I was. The other person's like, whoa, this is a bait and switch.
And it honestly doesn't do that other person any good either.
Exactly.
And to talk about it just in gender roles, when women pretend to be weak, that doesn't do men any service. I mean,
no.
It makes them feel good about themselves, but it's not real.
I had a friend of mine who is, she's interested in a person, and this person comes from a different culture than American culture. And so she was like, how do gender roles play in that culture? Like, mm-hmm. are my signals being read the same mm-hmm. way? And she goes, I'm an assertive person, and I, you know, I'm the one who wants to take the lead. And that's not really a thing in that culture. They take things a lot slower and they do this and that. And I said, well, if you change yourself, then that person's not really interested in
No.
you. They're interested in this persona of you. So it sounds really cliche to just be yourself, but it is really one of the hardest things to do, but also at the same time, the best way to get connection with people, or just connection in general, is just being yourself. And if people are not, you know, if they're not attracted to that as, like, a friend or otherwise, then it probably wasn't going to work out anyways.
Well, because it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
So when I was in Ireland for 3 years doing mission work. And before we went, we took all these personality tests, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the ones, I wish we had done the Enneagram, but that wasn't something anyone was talking about yet.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of the things that we did ranked all these different traits on a spectrum. So it would be like aggressive versus passive.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of another two opposites, but anyway, introverted, extroverted, whatever.
Sure.
And so it would put you on a scale. So, like, it had your natural number, where you would be naturally on that scale,
mm-hmm.
and then your adapted number.
Mm.
So, like, I was naturally quite aggressive, but it was showing my adapted number was pulling me more towards the center. So let's say it moved me like five spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So what they were teaching us is that anytime your adapted style and your natural style are far apart, the further apart they are, the more energy it's taking for you to maintain your adaptive style. Mm-hmm. And so when you are stressed or tired or
if you're hungry,
all that. Those are the spots that are going to snap first. And how important it is to like, not that I should just let myself be aggressive, but that the people around me need to know I'm working really hard to be, to meet you in the middle on this particular character trait. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be aggressive all the time.
Sure.
But you know, like you want to be approachable or whatever, but that takes a lot of work sometimes. And so, I guess the way this connects to our conversation now with selling yourself short or knowing who you are, is that you have to be honest with yourself about your natural style and all of those things. And then, how much energy it's taking you to move toward the center.
Oh man. Okay. So speaking about value and energy and things like that, I'm brought back to, you know, I'm going to go to Comic-Con in 2 weeks and I'm taking a friend with me who like lots of people is not their jam, it's going to take a lot of effort and energy to be there. Whereas for me, I'm like, yeah, party, let's all go. Yeah. Going to take me very minimal energy. If not, give me a high for crying out loud. She's going because she values our friendship. So she's taking all of that. She knows who she is and what she can handle. And she knows that it's going to take her more energy, but she is valuing that energy and like gifting it to me, like gifting me that time and that experience.
Yeah. Well, also, but there must be something in her that like will enjoy the Comic-Con experience, right? Like, is she into,
like she loves,
not the Comic-Con experience, but like the
culture. She loves the nerd culture.
Yeah.
But like, I had a friend who loved basketball and I am terrible at it, but she'd be like, let's go and like shoot some hoops. I didn't like that. Uh-huh. I don't want to do that. I like spending time with her. So even though it took me way more energy to be there and do that thing, I like being there with her.
Yeah.
That's what was like, that was my gift to her.
Yeah.
Is that energy that it took to play basketball.
I guess my gift to you will be we can go to frickin' escape room.
We could do puzzles together. Yes. Oh, that would be so cool. But yeah, I think that ties in with our previous episode about generosity, is that knowing yourself and being like honest with the value that you put on your energy and being authentically you means that you're like better able to give to someone generously, because you know, oh, it's going to take me this much energy. I know the value of that energy. Here's what I can give.
Right. Okay. So like to tie that to like, let's just talk about a t-shirt quilt.
Mm-hmm.
If someone asks me to do a t-shirt quilt, I know what that takes from me a lot and I hate doing them. And I'm actually sending people theirs back that I know I'm not going to finish. So, I get to decide, do I want to be generous to this person? And at what point will I resent them?
Yeah.
For how agreeing generous? To do this.
Right. Cause I think everyone's got a limit.
Mm-hmm.
We got a finite set of resources as human beings, like as far as like time and things like that. Not creativity though. That's not finite. And there's a point where you're like, nope, anything more than this, I will hate it. So I can't.
Yeah.
But some people will take themselves well beyond that because, oh, that's what's expected of me.
Well, and sometimes as a creative person, I think back to last week, that's a way we can be generous through our creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And so you genuinely want your friends to know that you love them and you care about them. So it's easy to overcommit yourself from a good place. Like it's because you want that person to know how much they mean to you.
Yeah.
But again, then you're putting, you're like connecting certain things to value that shouldn't be connected, time and money and all of that, when there's other ways you can show that person that you value them.
You don't have to just make them a t-shirt quilt.
Right.
You can send that back and be like, hey, let's have a conversation, or like, let's Skype. Let's go for coffee.
Or you can be like, I don't want to hate you. So I need to get this back to you.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's just how it is.
And it's not personal.
Yeah, no.
It's that this making this is the worst.
Yes. that clears up. That goes through all of the things that I had to discuss about that. Are you?
Yeah. Okay. Something that you had said made me think of something, but now I forgot what it was.
Okay. Well, if you think about it again.
Yeah.
Just interrupt.
I think that don't sell yourself short. The opposite of that is like, or maybe the other way to say that is to recognize and name your value.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be really hard. I think maybe you just have to tackle it from whichever direction feels more approachable.
Yes. For me, I'm definitely, I tend to lean probably more as like a negative person. Uh-huh. So the idea of like, don't sell yourself short. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do I do that?
And there's different, like even in this, there's different ways that you and I both do that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I think everyone at least undervalues some aspects of Absolutely. Themselves that needs a little love and care. Mm-hmm. So going forward for myself this week, as I'm going through these invoices, but also like spending time with other people, one of the ways that I'm trying not to undervalue myself is figuring out what like the opportunity cost is for whatever I'm choosing to participate in.
Okay.
So if I, you know, like if I'm choosing to go and hang out with friends and Richard's going to stay home, the opportunity cost there is I'm not spending time with him.
Yeah.
You know, how do I balance all of that? How do I value that time? Is it more valuable right now to, you know, go and spend time with Richard versus hanging out with friends? Or,
and there's so much that you like in that case, you have to weigh what you need and also like other people need.
Exactly. And that's what can make like valuing yourself in relationships really tough, is because it's not just about like you and some other, you know, and money, which doesn't have feelings. It's you and other people.
Yeah. That reminds me of the email that I sent to our Zest friends. So our Zest friends are our monthly donors. And
hey Zest friends.
Well, yeah, I love you.
Yeah.
And every month we send them a little video about something that's going on at Make Do. So this month I sent them, the gist of it was like, you know, your ongoing support makes it possible for us to do the work that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this month, I want to talk to you about how your ongoing support makes it possible, gives me the freedom to not do the work.
Yes.
And how our having that, those recurring contributions that we know we're going to get, make it possible for us to care for ourselves as well as we're caring for our community. Mm-hmm. And what a gift that is.
Yes.
And now I forgot how that tied into what you were saying. But I think that acknowledging, being upfront with what we require as humans, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be able to take time off work when we have surgery.
Yes.
Or when we have a migraine. Or like we need to be able to take care of ourselves. And those people, I know you had said it doesn't have to be monetary, but this is, it's just easier to talk about it in mm-hmm. terms of money, right? That was just an example of me finding my value outside of my productivity and knowing I can send this email to our supporters who, and say, part of what you're supporting is providing is nothing mm-hmm. new. No new programs, nothing exciting or sexy to report. We're just surviving over here. And thank you. We can survive because
you are sustaining us.
Yeah.
You are allowing it. Yeah. And yeah, it is kind of, yeah, you're right. It's not sexy or flashy.
Uh-huh.
But it's honest and it's consistent. And I think if humans were more honest with themselves, we want that like consistency. Like everyone talks about being in a new relationship, like, oh, it's so good. All these songs are written about new passionate relationships. Oh, it's so great. But what really has value is those relationships that stand the test of time.
Right, because in the new one, in that new relationship, you never know what part of you is going to be the part that ends it.
What?
Like what can you be your whole self with this person? And what part of you,
when you are being authentic,
yeah, is that they're going to be like, oh, this is not the relationship for me.
Yeah. Ooh. That might be a whole nother new topic. But yeah, that's a good point. Do you have any tips on, like...
Well, I just realized I didn't, like... I didn't write anything down.
That's all good.
You had said this week... I don't remember how you said it.
This week, I'm looking about... talking about the opportunity cost for things.
Yes, opportunity cost. So I can say that this week and for an unknown amount of weeks moving forward, I am just continuing to disconnect my value from my productivity. Mm-hmm. And I think that the challenge for me is going to be when it's time to come back, not feeling like I have to make up for lost time.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be rough.
And that I don't have to have a sling on my arm for it to be true. Like, it's not only true that my value and productivity are not connected because I'm injured.
Yeah.
It's true always.
Yes. Indeed.
So, I'm tiptoeing into that lesson.
So, I wrote these tips before we had this conversation, and I have changed my mind on some things.
Oh.
But one of the things that I wrote down that I think can still kind of work is putting numbers to what you are doing. I'm not necessarily saying, like, money. Could be money, which is what I just had to do with my invoice. But it could be like counting the hours that you're doing something.
Yeah.
And just letting yourself realize how much time you are spending on this thing.
Right. Well, we did talk about how if you take the currency is so handy because it gives us a metric.
Yes.
So if you don't have any metrics,
mm-hmm.
then what are you connecting your value to? Like, I think that there is, we still need to prove it to ourselves, right?
Yes.
Or like have a way to, even in how we talk about make do and are we meeting our goals?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if classes are smaller than we want them to be, does that mean we failed?
Mm-hmm.
No, we just have to find a new way of celebrating the wins, mm-hmm. or the value or whatever.
I got to tell you, doing this whole invoice has made me look at the cosplays that I make a lot differently. I'm putting a lot more value on mm-hmm. those items that I'm making because I'm like, oh, if I had to sell this.
Right.
Oh, this would be expensive.
Right.
So that's why I don't loan out my cosplays to people. So if you ask me, hey, can I borrow your princess dress? The answer is no.
Right. Or would you let someone rent it?
Oh, it would be a very expensive rent.
Yeah, and see, then
it's not worth it. So yeah,
be a deposit, and then they could get it back.
Sure,
but
that was one of my things. Do you have any comments on that about numbers? I mean,
I think that finding something tangible.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's not numbers,
yeah.
It doesn't have to be numbers, but like something tangible to tether your value, like not that your value is reliant on that thing,
no. But humans, we struggle with abstract thinking,
right? It just helps ground the thinking. Like right now your value is just floating over your head. It's all mm-hmm. ethereal. You know, it's there, but where is it?
So maybe
it makes it visible.
Yeah. So maybe instead of numbers, maybe it's just writing down the things that you value about mm-hmm. yourself. And then maybe the ways that expresses itself and it's in your life and like, oh, here are the things that I value. Or I just did this with my therapist the other day. She's like, what is the most important thing to you right now? And I was like, oh man, I had to sit there for a moment. And I was like, you know what? Now I'm going to forget. The second thing that was most important to me was connection. But the first one was, not steadiness, but like
ice cream.
Stability. That's what it was. Stability and connection. She's like, great. So now you know what those two things that are important to you. Now you can make all of your decisions based on those two things that you value. And I was like, oh, it does make things so yes. much clearer.
Yeah. You know, that another thing would be to, what do you value in other people? Because mm-hmm. sometimes that can help you. That can be a mirror, right? Into what you are wanting in yourself or what you could value in yourself.
Yes.
And that's interesting because one of the things I value most is flexibility.
Yeah.
And when you first started, that is where we had a little bit of
like a miscommunication. Yeah. Like we were missing each other.
I wanted flexibility. You wanted stability and accountability. And yeah. I wasn't giving that to you. But, and so that made it difficult for you to do your job and for me to manage you.
Yes.
Manage you, whatever.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was managing me, but, and you were also teaching me how to do my job and it was a whole new job. It is a whole thing. You can go and check out like the behind the scenes. Behind make do.
Yeah. I think we talked about it before, that. But I didn't remember when.
Yeah. Yeah. So just like find a way to like make to ground it, whether it's journaling your value, mm-hmm. putting numbers to whatever
a
you're
number
doing.
Or a name or something. Yep. Like, yeah. No, I think that that's great.
Yeah. But then my last one that I really don't know exactly if I agree with still.
Ooh, this is interesting.
Is look at self and what you're doing and think about it like a job. Like consider the skill required, all of that. And I'm like, maybe I don't want to necessarily think about what I give to my friends in context of a job and in context of like money.
I think that that does apply though for the first half of our conversation where we're talking about a creative entrepreneur, hobby, endeavor, whatever, where money is being exchanged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Consider it like you would like a typical job, but yeah. I would not do that for all of the more abstract things that
no.
we talked about.
No.
Because your friends aren't a job.
No.
They do require upkeep, but like it's not.
And you're not a commodity.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your sour this week?
I found a spider in my bed last night. I pulled back the sheets and this thing. Oh, I'm sorry. I should have. Okay.
You're fine. The spider didn't bite. Nothing. Yeah, everything's
no,
fine.
But like some so people no. just really don't like talking about it. Oh. So skip ahead for a little bit. It was about the size of like maybe like a half dollar. Like it was big and oh, it was tan and it was creepy. And I'm not afraid of spiders. I'm afraid that they pop up in random places.
Yeah,
it's the jump scare that gets me. Mm-hmm. Like the black widow I found in my mailbox, mm-hmm. or the spider in my bed. So yeah, that's my sour.
Yeah, that's a scary sour.
Yeah, spider talk over.
Yeah,
you can.
Ron Weasley now. Doesn't like spiders.
I have a friend who doesn't like spiders either. I'm not going to tell her about it.
Does she listen to the podcast?
I think she does. So I'll just tell her like, hey, fast forward at the end.
Yeah. My sour. This is the sour I couldn't remember last week. Is that I miss seeing my tattoo.
Oh, that's right. It's on your right arm.
Yeah, it's covered up with a sling, and so I just miss it.
Yeah.
I see it occasionally. I'll see it when I do PT. I guess that can be my my encouragement or like my reward for doing PT.
This is going to sound weird, but like since you're not using that arm and it's not getting sunlight, uh-huh. does the tattoo kind of look different or does it look like the same?
I don't think it's the sunlight. I think it's like that, like my skin does feel different because, you know, it's not getting dry all the way. It's like sweaty. Mm-hmm. So it feels like a little wrinkly.
Interesting.
I've been drying my armpit with a hair dryer because I can't move my arm like all, you know,
up to try and like hang it
yeah.
out.
And ooh, here's another sour.
Oh,
since you shared
sours.
One about an insect or a spider. I had my sling off last night yeah. because my PT said, yeah, just start spending more time out of it, like when you're sitting down and stuff. So I was sitting down reading.
Cool.
And a fly landed on my right forearm, and I just instinctively, like, jerked it away.
Oh,
holy cuss words. It hurt so bad. Like, the fast, like, that twitch motion of
yes.
the jerk. And I thought I was going to pass out.
Oh.
And then that's when I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm injured.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. I put my sling back on.
Good,
I was
I
like, I'm not risking it sitting here.
We need the flies to die off so that
oh
you can
gosh.
Have spend less time.
Can you imagine if I like ripped out my rotator
no,
cuff repair?
Stop. Oh, no.
And they were like, what happened? Did you fall? No. A fly landed on me and I jerked.
It was a knee jerk reaction.
A shoulder jerk reaction. Ugh, it hurt so bad. Okay, what's your sweet?
As this time of recording, it is the last day of August. We about to enter September, which is now going to be, it's my spooky season.
I know.
It's
you know
the
what?
Beginning.
I was just thinking about that too. I love the end of the year so much. And every time when the end of the year is over, I'm like, oh, so aww. Sad. It's going to take so long to get back to the end of the year. Yeah. And then when it always happens.
Yeah. So here we are about to walk into September, which that means I'm getting out my spooky stuff. I'm going to start decorating my house. I'm going to get my fall foliage out. I'm going to start switching over my
you
wardrobe.
You can decorate, make do, spooky.
Make it all creepy.
We've got our black Christmas tree.
We do have our black Christmas tree. And maybe I can get my kids to bring their, they've been making packing tape sculptures and it just looks like body parts. Creepy body
yeah.
parts around here.
Okay, I have two sweets. I had two sours, so I'll have
so
two
yeah,
sweets
yeah, it
too.
Balances out.
The first one is that I started PT. It's like a bittersweet because
yeah.
it also hurts.
I was about to say.
But It means I'm like, I've just have felt like I have been sitting on the tarmac of a stuffy airplane for 2 hours. And then you're like, I would be halfway to my destination by now. Mm-hmm. That's how I have felt not being able to start PT for so long. And so now that I've started PT, I feel like,
this is the takeoff.
Hey, we're moving again. Okay, excellent. That's one. The second sweet is that I reached level 2,000 in 2 dots.
Oh, my goodness.
I passed it, actually.
Wow. That is pretty cool.
I know. So.
Awesome.
That's just so exciting.
Yeah, that's nice.
What are you learning?
This week, I'm going to be learning how to do some, like, creepy corpse makeup. I've gotten pretty good at, like, the sweet, like, replicating Disney princesses or just, like,
yeah,
doing.
Will you Insta story it?
I might be able to. Yeah. It depends on how it turns out.
No, but you should Insta story the learning.
The learning of it? Okay, I will. But I'm going to be trying to replicate a character. I got my arm socks done that I talked about last week with, like, the fingers and stuff.
Did you figure out the neck?
Yes. So I'm going to end up, instead of, like, having a really high neck, I made it really low, and I'm just going to color my chest.
Gotcha.
And I'm okay with makeup getting on this cosplay because I'm not wearing it without the creepy makeup.
What color are you? Is your skin turning?
It's like a creepy gray. So okay. I'm going like, I might be able to get some like white highlights airbrushed onto it because I have a friend that has one, but I'm going to do like a whitish gray face with like cool purple lips. And
I'm so impressed.
I'm going to get like fake nails.
Yeah, you should definitely like take us on this journey.
Yeah. So. I ordered the makeup. I'm super excited. It should be coming in soon. It's going to be cool.
How fun.
Yes.
Okay.
What about you? Are you learning anything new?
I mean, other than that my value is not connected to my productivity.
Still learning that? We'll forever be learning that? Some lessons are worth learning all your life.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is I'm really just reading and watching TV and doing like a little bit of work. A little bit of emails,
learning to lean into that rest. Mm-hmm. That's good.
It doesn't feel like rest. It feels like, I don't want to use the word laziness. It feels like procrastination. That's what it feels like. It feels like how I feel in short spurts when I am procrastinating doing the work I don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but you're just letting your body do the work. Right now, that's the work that needs to be done is the healing. And your brain's like, well, what am I supposed to do during this time?
Right. And I mean, so my brain is reading. It's that I have a hard time doing things on the computer, and everything mm-hmm. we do is on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And then because it's my right hand, you know, I can't even like sit and draw on Procreate or anything. Mm-hmm. So
that's sad.
But I am. Well, here's something I'm learning. Some Canva.
Oh, all right.
Because I am doing, like, making some posts, social media posts for us on Canva.
Yay.
You know what else? This is a sour learned last night.
We're getting real tart today.
Instagram no longer will do square videos. Like, if I want to just post a video to our feed.
Oh, yes.
It has to be a reel.
Yes, I saw that the other day, and I was like, why?
That whole Mondays with Madison?
Yeah.
It's all square.
I know. I was frustrated about it, too, when they're like, hey, by the way, it all has to be reels. I'm like,
so I'll change now that we know, I will update that to be a reel size. But
come on, people. Instagram.
Pissing me off. Sorry, Mooley. I didn't mean to say the P word. Except I did.
All right. On that.
Okay. On that happy note. We'll see you on Instagram.
Yeah.
Look out for our new reels that will be coming out, not videos.
Yes.
So much.
Yeah.
Also, our value is not connected to our engagement on Instagram.
Yes.
But we would appreciate it if you gave us a comment or something.
Yeah. We here for that. Just chat with us. We like people. We here for the connection, baby.
Yeah. And we honestly, speaking of connection, we know very few people that listen to the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Who you are. So say hi to reach out.
Oh, yeah. I met one of our Instagram followers at like a church potluck. They're like, they like came up to me and they were kind of like, hey, so I watch you on Instagram and I think you're cool. And I was like, oh my word, you're precious. I love them. So yeah, reach out. We love it.
Mm-hmm. It helps us feel like we're not just talking into a vacuum or like just to each other.
Yeah. Plus, it's cool to get to know like all of you and who you are. And yeah, it's just awesome.
Yeah. So there's a little plug for connection. Okay. Well, we hope you're learning something too this weekend.
Yeah.
But maybe that will be that you have value. Don't sell yourself short.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you to my dear, dear friend Craig Hudson for our very createful theme music. You can hear more of Craig's music on Spotify under Craig Hudson, that's Hudson with a T, or you can just click on the link in the show notes. Also, be sure to connect with Make Do on Instagram at Make Do Create or on Facebook at Make Do Cersei, and visit our website, makedocreate.org, for upcoming classes, show notes, to order a face mask, lots of things. We'll be back here with another episode next Monday. Have a good week, y'all.